This episode of the Out of Bounds podcast is brought to you by Fisher's Keys. All right. How are we, everybody? Hello, hello. This is episode number 117. I'm your host, Adam Jabber, and this is the Out of Bounds podcast. I hope you guys have been doing well since we last spoke on Tuesday. As you know, we are on a Tuesday and Thursday schedule that I am hoping dearly that we can keep for this season, because it'll keep my life way more organized and I'll keep you guys hopefully on some kind of like expectancy schedule going forward. We've had some excellent episodes recently. Some have been doing really, really well. I would highly encourage you to tell a friend about the show and leave us a review on iTunes when you can. Apple Podcasts or whatever we want to pretend to call it. Also, give us a subscribe on Spotify. La, 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 la. This is just one big plug for the show. Anyway, more importantly, today we have Kurt Neeler on the show. Kurt Neeler is a skier. Kurt Neeler is an adventure type. He is a ski racing coach, but that is not why we're talking to Kurt today. We are talking to Kurt because he is also the author of Presidential Skiing. Presidential Skiing is a guide to backcountry skiing in New Hampshire's Presidential Range, which has some of the most iconic lines in New England. So if you live in New England, or if you have any interest in learning about or skiing some of these lines, no matter where you are, you should be checking out this book. Very seldom is a book like this created where you have full access to lines that have not been talked about really before and have not been put to paper in a way that's easily accessed. It's really well done, and I give Kurt all the props in the world for finishing it. You'll hear why he finished it right now in the episode, and it's really, really funny. You can go to presidentialskiing.com. This is not an ad for it. He just did an excellent job with this thing, and I really think you should check it out. You can check out Presidential Skiing on social media. You can check it out on the internet at www.presidentialskiing.com. I hope you guys enjoy it. Kurt's great. This was an excellent episode. I'm sorry, like some of the audio is like a little funny. Like I think when he moves his headphones kind of cut in and out. So we're going to try to make that sound as good as possible. But, you know, this is the world we live in now. We live in the world of phone call interviews, basically, as opposed to the way I like to do them. So, however, I will say the last few have been extremely enjoyable for me, and I've left all of them thinking that it was excellent. So I hope you guys enjoy the episode. Before we jump into this episode, I just want to say a quick thank you to our sponsor for the show. Sawatch Hemp is the sponsor of this episode. As you guys know, we have been working with Sawatch for quite some time. They make some of the best product, in my opinion, in the CBD world, period. They're a Colorado company, and they use stuff that actually makes you feel better. I mean, this is a wellness product for sure. I am currently staring at the 1500 vapor distilled hemp extract, which is a full spectrum CBD tincture, which is like the little dropper style stuff. This is like the big daddy. This is the strong stuff. There is a 750 and there is a 300. I would encourage you to try the one that suits your liking. The 1500 is definitely the strongest. That's what I use, and I've used the 750 in the past. I would actually encourage you to ask Evan at Sawatch via the DMs on social media which one is best for you, because he can probably give you some guidance better than I can, because I'm just a guy that uses the stuff that that I like, and this is what I like. So after that amazing ad read, you can go to www.sawatch.co and use promo code OUTOFBOUNDS to save 15% off your purchase of some of the best CBD product out there. I also encourage everybody, if you're buying stuff from them anyway and you're going to have it shipped to you, get the salve, the rub-on stuff, like the little can. I think they come in 2-ounce ones that are pretty cheap. Just try it. That shit is a game changer. You should 100% be doing that. So check that out. And yeah, that's basically it. Be sure to, once again, give us a follow on social media at Out of Podcast. Tell a friend about the show. It helps a ton, and I'd love to keep growing this thing. And check out Kurt Kneeler. Check out Kurt Kneeler's new book, presidentialskiing.com, and check out this conversation we had in 3, 2, 1, go. Kurt, who are you? Tell the people a little bit about yourself, and we'll go from there.
Sure. So my name is Kurt Kneeler. I'm the author of Presidential Skiing, and I also coach ski racing. I'm the U16 coach at Gould Academy in Bethel.
Sick. What's so. Gould Academy? Like, is it like a, it's a private school, I'm guessing?
Yeah, yeah, it's a prep school, but we have like a ski academy component to it. So
very cool.
We're up at Sunday River.
So I'm guessing you were a big ski racer growing up.
Yep, yeah, grew up ski racing.
Here in New England?
College. Yep. Yeah, I'm from Washington Valley area originally, so.
Very cool. How'd you get into it? Were your parents big skiers?
Yeah, so my dad was the ski school director at this place called King Pine. It's like just south of Conway. It's a, have you been there?
I've been there. Like, I've been there. I've never like skied there or anything, but like I've been there.
Yeah, for sure. Well, yeah, it's total molehill, but it's like 300 vertical feet. But I don't know. It's a pretty cool place. He was in that role for 25 years, I think, or something around that. So like my entire childhood, that was his job. So like ever since I was a kid, yeah, I skied there. I guess every day except Tuesday. But Tuesday was the off day, but yeah, it was sweet. So yeah, just grew up skiing there, doing the race program there, and then when I was got to be this age, so like 14, I started skiing with the Mount Washington Valley ski team. So that was like Attitash, Wildcat, Cranmore,
right?
And then yeah,
Is there still the same level of excitement as when you were a kid for ski racing, or is it dropped off a little? Is there more? I mean, it seems like there's more people skiing, but less people racing, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know. Hard to gauge, I guess. I mean, it seems pretty steady to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe in the Valley, it's dropped off a bit. Actually, I will say one shift I have noticed in the Mount Washington Valley is, there's a lot less local kids involved with it.
Hmm.
And I think that's due to just the sport getting kind of priced out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's dumb, isn't it? Like, it's like, it feels like every year stuff gets more expensive. Like just to go ski, never mind skiing racing, but skiing in general seems like it gets more expensive every year.
Yeah. Agreed.
I don't know.
I think it's kind of outpacing whatever, other economic gains people are seeing, but yeah, I mean, I guess that's the only shift I've really noticed is that like around the Mount Washington Valley anyway, it's definitely like more folks from Mass or wherever else with second homes that are involved in these programs, but, and less, kids from the Valley, but no, otherwise the numbers seem pretty steady to me.
Yeah. Cool.
So,
Have you always wanted a coach? Is that a thing that you were like that you've always been interested in, or was it just like kind of the next progressional step of a career path?
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily the plan. It was always something that I kind of had in the in my back pocket, I guess. But actually the way I got involved with it was I was like right after I graduated from college, I actually went down to New Zealand and was down there for a couple months and was coming back for like Northern Hemisphere winter. Right.
Yep.
And my dad now actually, he also works at Gould, but he is the like program director for the weekend program. So like all the groups like U14 and under. So
got it.
I was coming back from New Zealand. I was honestly kind of wanted to give myself like I was in the beginning process or stages of working on this book. So I kind of wanted to have like a flexible schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, hey, like, can I just like work for you on the weekends or something, like, you know, coaching younger kids? And he's like, oh sure, like I'll just bring it up with the program director. And then I actually ended up getting an offer for to coach the like U19/PG or postgrad athletes.
Sick.
At Gould, which it was definitely a more full-time gig and like full-on, but working with guy, his name's Parker Gray. If you're in the ski racing world, you probably know his name. He had just gotten off a stint working with the U.S. ski team, and he was like, you know, Pyeongchang coach for those Olympics. And like, I was just, I'd be working with him and I was like, oh, that actually sounds like a pretty cool thing. So I kind of, you know, started going down that. Yeah, I took that role and it kind of like evolved into something more. And I actually realized that I really liked doing it. And like, I don't know. Every day in the winter, I wake up and I'm stoked to get on the hill and go to work. So I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Definitely. So, that's better than I think most everybody has it. Like, I think everybody like that I know that gets up in the winter and goes to work is like, fuck, this is terrible. Yeah,
pretty like, much, especially when it's like 5:30 a.m. and it's dark and you know it's cold outside. But I'm just stoked to, I don't know, get my stuff on and get out the door. So
that's a good sign for sure.
Yeah, I think so, too. So.
All right. So tell me a little bit about the book. What is that? What is the book, first of all, for people that aren't familiar? And what was the idea? Like, why did you decide that, like, okay, I'm going to put together this guidebook, basically?
Yeah. So Presidential Skiing is a guidebook for backcountry skiing in the presidential range. And, you know, obviously it kind of centers on Tuckerman Ravine, which everyone I think has probably heard of. Mm-hmm. And kind of just like the east side of Mount Washington in general, that area is pretty developed and a lot of those routes are like well known, I guess, but there's just a lot of other means throughout the range that kind of have a lot of, you know, they play host to a lot of good steep skiing, a lot of good gullies, kind of similar to what you'd find in Tux, but kind of more off the beaten path. So not really explored as much. And yeah, for a lot of these places, there was info that kind of existed online. There's this there's old janky forum called Time for Tuckerman.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of had its heyday like 15 years ago. But there's tons of stuff if you really like dig. Like you can find some cool stuff on a lot of this. But there wasn't really like a definitive resource where like all this was together. And also on the other hand, like, you know, kind of serves as a record for what's been done because, you know what I mean? Like, as far as I'm concerned, any like gully or snowfield or anything you see in the White Mountains has probably been skied by some person at some point in time, you know, like people have been skiing up there for over 100 years. So I guess, yeah. And I guess the reason I decided to take this on, because honestly, like, it's kind of just something I wanted to see, like, selfishly.
It makes sense. Like, I'm surprised no one's done it like in a concise way, I guess, before, you know?
Yeah, it was pretty surprising. I mean, honestly, when I kind of decided I wanted to, I like really had to like double and triple check to make sure that I wasn't like kind of like encroaching on something that's been done in the past or maybe like someone did something in the 90s or whatever. But no, it like truly hadn't been done before. And it just seemed like, and I'm sure a lot of people felt this way, but it's such like an obvious gap in the like literature around it. I mean, as you know, it's so popular now and it's kind of been on the rise in the last 4 or 5 years. And I think it's going to explode this year because of COVID and all the uncertainties with resort skiing and, yeah,
I will say you probably picked a very good time to launch a guidebook about backcountry areas that are accessible to people in cities.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how that works. I actually really wanted it to be done last fall.
Yeah.
You know, and like every year I'm watching this get like bigger and bigger. And I remember like thinking to myself last fall, like, damn, like this is the biggest this has ever been. I totally missed the mark. Like, I wonder if it's going to be the same next year. And then like, just as it turns out, you know, one thing led to another. And now we're in the middle of an ongoing global pandemic and people are going bonkers for it, for backcountry skiing. So like,
are you worried about the impact that might have? Like more people getting out into those areas that maybe haven't had the experience to go ski that stuff? Like, is that a concern for you? And do you think the having a book, like a guidebook like that, helps or hurts that?
Yeah, I definitely think that's a huge concern. I guess with the guidebook, honestly, I think to some degree, kind of spreading the crowds out necessarily be a bad thing. Like right. The east side of Mount Washington can get really congested.
Mm.
And there's definitely like, you know, some weekend days where it's like borderline unusable because there's so many people there. Especially, and I mean, on like, you know, that was kind of the main driver why they closed down the Cutler River drainage this spring, you know,
mm-hmm.
just because there were so many people there, like they couldn't like enforce the guidelines. But yeah, but to the point about less experienced folks, I mean, I'm sure that's going to happen to some degree, but I do think like, you know, some of the like gnarlier stuff / kind of things that are more out there, like there's still a pretty high price of admission to access that.
Right.
And I do believe that alone will kind of fend off those who are less experienced or probably shouldn't be out there.
Yeah.
So,
and honestly, like, I think, like you said, spreading it out a little from like the traditional lines is probably a good thing too. And I think, not that I'm suggesting that, like, you know, people now knowing about these zones is like in any way like a bad, I think it's a good thing that people know about it. There's just like, I think there's going to be a gap in education from what people probably need to have and what they will have going out there for a lot of people. 'Cause like, I can tell you firsthand, like the amount of new touring setups, like people that are good skiers too, like people that are avid skiers that have never gotten a touring setup before are getting them now. Like it's now, it's a consideration. It's the same way, like when somebody would walk in and be like, yeah, I want a ski that's good for skiing the trees. Like, it's like the same thing is happening now with people like, yeah, I want something, like they're looking at it the same way, I guess, where it's like, it is still skiing. Whereas like, I think 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, like AT stuff was like, it was almost closer to telly than it was to like regular people skiing. Now, like regular people are like, cool, I can go walk up a hill and get some turns.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, actually. I think one thing that kind of differs skiing from, say, you know, rock climbing or whitewater kayaking is, like, if you, like, there's a lot of people who, I think, you know, they ski at the resort every weekend and they kind of think that, you know, they're confident in themselves and they're like, oh, like, I can ski down anything. But I think just it's really important for people to know that, like, is a completely different ball game headed out in the backcountry. Like there's so many more risks to manage. And yeah, I just want, yeah, for sure. Just on the air, I just want to say every single route in this book is an avalanche terrain. It takes definitely a baseline of both avalanche and just general mountain safety knowledge and awareness. Yeah.
Yeah,
I definitely do think that's a concern for sure. But hopefully, you know, people will get out there and kind of realize what it takes to actually get up some of these things. And
right, I think the variables are so much less controlled, you know, in the backcountry. Like the resort, you don't realize how many things the resort takes like off of your head that you don't have to think about being in the mountains. Like if you go and you take the chairlift up, they've already made sure that the lift up is safe, the trails are cleared. Like if there's too much ice, even they close that shit. I'll tell you what, like they definitely don't do that. And there's nobody there being like, you know, putting a little like orange X in front of like black ice patches. Like this is not, it's not the same thing. Like it's a totally different level, like both in difficulty and in just like the level of awareness that you have to have for your surroundings, I think. So I think that is, it's important to know. But what I think is good about the book is people are now going to be genuinely invested in furthering their education, I think, because they now have this tool that shows like, yeah, like there's all this stuff out here. You have to do certain things to like actually have access to it, I guess, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I tried to make focus on kind of like the resources surrounding the mountain. Like the first 40 pages are all just like introductory. Like I tried to put in plugs for a lot of nonprofits that kind of focus around the mountain and, you know, are involved with safety there. And yeah, I'm hoping this is kind of like a catalyst for people to kind of pursue education on their own and have it be a place where they can kind of discover the resources or the things they need to get themselves trained to be out there. So
yeah, has anybody like been butthurt about you getting, like, about you putting all these zones and lines out there?
I think there's probably been a few. Honestly, though, I have to say I'm actually surprised and I guess maybe almost relieved that the reception has been so positive. When I announced the project, I put it on that backcountry touring Facebook group, right? And the post got like 1,100 likes, and I only got 2 sad faces and 1 angry face on the 1,100. So I understand that there's probably a lot of people who kind of feel, or probably maybe keeping it to themselves how they truly feel.
I don't know, though,
it,
dude. Facebook is the one. If you were going to get some idiots being real mad at you, Facebook is the place you were going to get them. So I feel like that's pretty good.
That is true. That is true. But no, I mean, I'm sure there's people who, I think just in general, the outdoor ethics of the Mount Washington Valley kind of default towards like the old guard mentality.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's folks out there who are probably not that psyched on it, but I don't know. It is what it is, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, what are you going to do? Like, you can't make everybody happy. And I think the amount of people that you're going to make happy doing this are way, way outnumber the people that are going to be unhappy with it.
Yeah, I agree. And honestly, it was inevitable, really. I mean, the fact that it's 2020 and it hadn't been done yet and people have been skiing.
It has
so
to be
long,
done. Like, and it's not like you're putting out like, I mean, you didn't just put it on like trail forks with a guided, it's a book. People still have to go out of their way to read a book and like learn about the areas. If anything, that should teach people more respect for the areas that they're going to be using now.
For sure. And I tried to definitely keep there's a lot of thought put behind kind of how I display or wrote about the content and like keeping things concise or keeping things general if need be. And, you know, like kind of like, I guess not really like fleshing out too much about certain things. So like, I guess it's designed in a way where you actually have to, like, it's a supplemental tool in planning your outing. Like, you can't just like go out there and stick your nose in the book and then like follow it up to the whatever route you want to ski. Like, it's a resource for you to help in planning your own outing. It's not like the end all be all, I guess. So
right, yeah, the book's not gonna go ski it for you.
Yeah, like you can't like point to something in the book and like magically appear.
That
like,
would be sick.
That would be tight.
I'm super down. If you want to do that next as your next project, I'm into this idea.
Yeah, I think it's the second edition. You know, technology's not quite there, but you know, but.
We're going to go book to teleportation real quick. What was the hardest part about making I'm imagining most people that are listening to this have not made a book or a guidebook for that matter. How did you start doing that? Like, how do you find the resources to do that? And what was the hardest part for you? Like, cause that's gotta be a lot of fucking work that like people are not acknowledging right now.
Oh yeah. It kind of, I guess I'll just say right off the bat, I guess my mantra for putting this book together, and it's kind of like how I try to frame any sort of like big creative project like this or whatever, big paper. Like, I always just do the easy part first. Like, whatever's easiest to you, like, just do that first. Like, so when I first started writing this in April of 2018, and the first things I wrote about were Tuckerman Ravine and the Boot Spur area, just because I know those the best, like a lot of other backcountry skiers probably do. And I just, you know, I, at that point in time, there were still some areas that I needed to get to like experience for myself before I wrote about it. So I just like didn't even let myself like get overwhelmed with that. Like, I've had the whole thing framed out and like mapped out like what's going to go here and there, but like I just wouldn't really kind of think too far ahead. And honestly, like, yeah, this is my first foray into book publishing. I had no idea what I was doing. I just had an idea and I just was like, you know, because the thing is, like, how many books are in the world, right? Like, it can't be, I don't know. I guess my view is like, it can't be that hard to put out a book. There's
a lot of books.
There's a lot of books out there, and there's a lot of really stupid books out there.
So many stupid books. So, yeah, there's books on everything. Dude, Chicken Soup for the Soul has like 7,000 copies of the same. Like, it's got like, it's a series of so many things. Like,
yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's a very, like, it's a process as old as time. And just because I personally hadn't experienced it didn't mean that I couldn't, like, learn about it, I guess. So I just, like, I had the idea. I just kind of rolled with it. I just kind of tackled what made sense at the time and didn't get too focused on the future. And honestly, it kind of just like all snowballed into the final product. And it's funny because, like, I don't know. Yeah, there are definitely aspects of it that surprised me with how difficult they ended up being. Like, so I guess the writing itself, like for the roots, like that's pretty much been done since May 2019. Like obviously there's been some tweaks I've made and a lot of editing and so forth, but it's pretty much been in its final form for like over a year now. And when I finished that, I was like, oh, this thing's written. Like I got a book. Like let's do this. But then I realized like writing is like 10% of it probably, you know?
Yeah.
Like, especially with a guy, like, I mean, let's be honest, like, it's pretty much a glorified picture book, right?
Right.
And at that point, I had zero pictures. I had, like, a couple iPhone shots, but I
That's
was like,
crazy.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, this would be no big deal. Like, I'll just hit up some people and I'll get what I need, no problem. And then, like, I don't know. Everyone kind of just said F you, but I definitely wasn't getting a lot of movement on that. And honestly, I don't know. There was a lot of things that I hadn't figured out yet. So I just said, fuck it. I'll just do it next year, maybe. And then honestly, next year came and, you know, as my role at Gould has kind of been evolving into like something more. So I was just really busy last winter and had a really big spring planned, like a lot of travel, both for, like Gould and like personal trips. And so I was like, book's gonna happen when I'm older. Maybe I can't do it right now. And then, you know, this ongoing global pandemic occurred and everything.
So the
got
pandemic
wiped out.
Is the reason the book is finished. Is that what you're about to say?
Correct. 100%. This is a product of COVID-19. This book. I mean, in fairness, I had a pretty good head start.
Yeah.
Right. But, yeah, no, the thing had been indefinitely tabled.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, and then COVID came around and white. Like, I was going, like, I was literally 4 days away from embarking on, I was going to Burke for a week, then North Conway for a week, then Sugarloaf for a week, then Loveland, Colorado for a week, then I was going to try to sneak out to Utah and visit some friends. And then I was home for 4 days and I was going to Iceland for a week and a half. And then I was home for 3 weeks and I was going to France for a month. Like that was my spring. And I'm like, I have no opportunity to write this book. Like it's not going to happen this year. And then literally like in one afternoon, all that just got wiped out. And I spent like the entire April just like, you know, I was actually a good boy. I didn't go up and ski during April. I abided by the restrictions. So I just spent the entire month of April just like, kind of grinding this out, like getting the writing where it needs to be. And actually, I should say in early April, one big thing that I did that kind of changed the whole momentum of this project was, so yeah, you asked what the hardest part was. To me, the hardest part was getting those aerial photos. Because there was like, you know, there's some aerials floating around from the presidential range, but you know, they weren't exactly what I was looking for, but it was like, it was close enough. So I was going to try to like get a hold of those, but that all fell through. So I was like, all right, I need to get up in an airplane and just like shoot this myself. So yeah, again, it took like a wide open schedule to do this because there's in the wintertime, there's about 1 day a month where the weather is like clear with no wind on Mount Washington. So I had to reschedule the flight like 3 times. I chartered a flight out of like Laconia and then, yeah, we went up there and we did a loop around the mountain and, it was awesome. Like I got all the photos I needed. It was pretty sweet too. I yeah, I like hired this guy, this pilot. He couldn't have been older than like 22, man. He's like just some young guy. Like, I feel like if I had gotten like some older, more experienced guy, he'd be like, well, I don't fly near that. But I'm like, hey, can we do another loop around the Great Gulf? This guy's like, yeah, no problem.
Dude, I'd love to. Are you kidding? No worries.
It was awesome. I mean, yeah, it was, you know, it was a pretty calm day, but you know, it's still flying around the presidential. So my head hit the ceiling a couple times, but it was good. But yeah, that was getting those photos and getting exactly what I wanted there. That was kind of like the moment where I was like, okay, this thing's actually happening now. Because like before, like when the writing was done, like in my head, I'm like, oh, it's done. But I knew like I didn't have what I needed to produce it. So yeah, once I got those photos, I edited them. I mocked up actually my standard in like pitching this book to the contributors was I would include the section on boots for like the writing, and then like the aerial photo that I like drew the lines on in, just because like that's super relatable to a lot of people. They all know those lines. And honestly, like, yeah, I was kind of getting blown off the year before, but then like now at this point in the process, like I was like, people were really into it, and like the momentum just started building. And because there was a lot of people who contributed either photos, like the action photos that you see in it, or kind of just like helped proofread or shape a lot of the things in the introduction, like all those nonprofits that are highlighted, like Avalanche Center, Observatory, like Friends of Tucker Ravine, all that stuff. Like the folks who run those organizations were in charge with, or were involved with shaping that. So, and then I started working with a graphic designer. His name's Brett Fitzgerald. He actually did the layout on the Granite Land book for the GBA Glades. Mm-hmm. And yeah, honestly, once he was behind it, like he's got such a good eye. Like the whole thing really came together, like just he and I working together. And yeah. And then actually, I guess the other big thing that kind of this whole process was, like, I mean, even up to this point, like even like up until May, like I still didn't really understand like what it meant to publish a book. Like I think a lot of, myself included, just a couple months ago, a lot of people think like you just like write a book and it just like some person tons publishes of copies. It.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody goes to a printer.
It's just like magically done. It's like, oh, I got a publisher. It's magically done, right?
Right.
And me not knowing how, like what the steps were, I'm like, I just need to find a publisher and then it'll magically get done.
Right.
So I'm like, I ended up reaching out to this guy named John Sykes, who wrote the guidebook for like rock climbing around Franconia Notch and kind of like the Western White Mountains, because on his website, it was listed as published by Eagle Cliff Press or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh, I this would be a good book for Eagle Cliff Press. They can do it. Went talking with John, and I have to give him a lot of credit, actually. He was kind of like my guide, I guess my publishing mentor in a way, because he's like, dude, Eagle Cliff Press, that's me. Like, it's not like some big fancy publisher. Like, I'm independently publishing this.
That's just so he doesn't get sued. Like,
well, it's not so much that you don't get sued, it's just so you have like a channel for the like money to go in and out of, you know?
Right.
It's just like a legal entity, I guess, or like an LLC.
Yeah.
So, so we got talking. He's like, yeah, like, I'd be glad to help you publish this, but you might consider just like self-publishing, really, because like that's all I am. And like and so he kind of helped like me understand like what that process really meant. And once I kind of like internalized that, I kind of like, that was the first time I really had a clear path of getting this like out, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I guess actually, if anyone's out there feels like they want to write a book at some point in time, I guess really the steps to it, like at its core, all a publisher is the person who finances it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, a publisher still needs to find a printer and a graphic designer and probably a distributor, and I don't know. So it was just kind of me on, like, it took me a while to get to that point, and it was like tons of conversations and a lot of dead ends too, to be honest. Like, but I guess it was just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just talking to a lot of people and kind of understanding what it actually meant.
But that's the right way to do it too, though, right? Like, I mean, because if you were just like, oh, I think I'm right. Like, you'd be like at the point where you have a book and it's like held together by like whatever those things are they give you like quick presentations with, you know, like it's like a fucking notebook. It's a spiral bound notebook, you know? Exactly. But this is like a legit book. Like, this is what it should be, which is why I think it's impressive for, like, for me, is like you look at it and you're like, this looks like what it should be. It doesn't look like this random bullshit that somebody just fucking took a couple pictures of with their iPhone. Like, it looks professionally done. Like, it looks like a legitimate product that you would pay money for, not something you get for free at a gas station. Like, and I think there's a very clear difference between something like this that people are like, okay, cool. Like, I can put dollars into this. Like, and I feel like I now have an attachment to the presidentials too, because I now have learned about it, you know, versus like you can pick up 1,000 of those, like, you know, 100-page books, like, or 50-page books, like, at every rest stop from here to fucking Canada, you know, like, it's just not the same thing. So I appreciate it. I haven't read it yet, but like, I will. We got to get some for the shop. So I got to get all that shit taken care of. But anyway, dude, it's sick. I'm excited to read it, and I think a lot of people are. Like, people have definitely, quite a few people hit me up with some questions. So actually, we should do some of those while we...
Yeah, that's awesome. And actually, yeah, I really appreciate you saying that. It really took, you're exactly right. If I had just like kind of like kept to myself, it would not be the same thing. But it really took kind of like swallowing your pride a little bit and just being vulnerable and just being willing to kind of like reach out to people that you didn't know, or just kind of like cold emailing. So like the equivalent of cold calling.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, cold emailing people and just being like, hey, like, this is what I'm doing. What are your thoughts? Like how
people that you don't know too, right?
Oh yeah. Mostly people that I don't know. I mean, I definitely, like, there were some people that I already kind of had relationships with that helped with, but yeah, the majority of folks, like, I had never met before, and it's just kind of like reaching out cold. But
it's a weird thing, isn't it? Like, I mean, it's cold. I never thought about it like cold emailing, but that's really what it is. Cause I was thinking about it, cause I'm like writing emails to like potential sponsors for the show. And I'm like, hey, this is what we're doing. Like, every time I write them, I feel like I'm like, I have to swallow my own ego and my own pride. Cause like, I think this does well, but then like, I'm like trying to put it into words that like, I have a plan for something. Here's the plan. Hope you like it. Give me feedback and information, and also maybe money, you know, like, so it's like, that like swallowing your ego thing and asking for help from someone is definitely a hard thing to do.
Yeah, for sure.
Did you ski everything in the book? Like, you skied every line there?
No, I haven't. So there's either 90 or 91 lines. I get a different number every time I count. But I've skied about 80 of them.
Okay, cool.
And the ones I haven't skied are ones that are really condition dependent.
Oh, okay.
And like, there's a bunch like in Webster Cliffs area and a couple in Huntington. But I kind of like, even though I've only personally skied around 80 of them, I made sure that I at least listened to a firsthand account of every one of them before.
80 out of 91 is pretty good score overall. So I think that's good.
It's good enough.
Yeah, it definitely passes the class.
Okay, that's good.
All right, let's do some questions here. We got two from Megan Dingman, so we'll use those. Scariest moment while researching for the book.
Yeah. Have one in mind. So, and I'm making myself vulnerable here, because I definitely, you know, acknowledge that this was a poor decision in hindsight, but it's actually the day that there was the fatal avalanche on Mount Washington last year. I was on the mountain that day, and I was really trying to get over to like the east side of Oaks Gulf and trying to pick some of those lines off for the book. Like, it was a clear day, but it was really windy and I was solo. And avalanche danger was moderate, but there was definitely a wind slab problem like in the forecast. And you know, I went up Hillman's, carried over to the top, to the central buttress line in Oaks, and there was a huge crown line, probably foot and a half deep, right? And but it had slid like either the night before, probably the night before actually, or sometime like a couple hours ago. Like, it was relatively fresh, but not like it had just happened. And the whole gully was like kind of stripped down to the icy bed surface. But you know, I'm an ex-racer. Like, I actually don't really mind skiing on hard stuff like that. And you know, me like having this tunnel vision because of the book, I'm like, all right, I'm over here now. Like I think I can manage this. Like, I'm just going to stick to the old icy bed surface and it'll be fine. Right. So I skied down. I mean, and that was fine actually when I was on that surface, but like right at the base of the gully, like right before the trees, I kind of like cut out to the right, just kind of like to let the slough by, like kind of just muscle memory, I guess. But like, as I cut out, like I ski onto this like wind loaded face, and like literally the second I touch it, like the entire thing propagates out like to my right and just like drops away. And thankfully I was like right on the corner of it. And like, as soon as I felt it, I like kind of like sidestepped back. So I wasn't like caught in it at all. But like, I think you hear people say all the time, like with avalanches, like it really just comes on quick. Right. And it's like, literally like the second I touched it, like the entire thing just like fell away. Like it really happened quick. And I'm like, yeah, I'm by myself. I'm at the base of Oaks Gulf, which is not visible from anywhere. Like, there's one point on Crawford Notch you can see it. It's about 10 miles away there. So I'm like, I'm invisible. I'm like, holy fuck, that was way too close. Like, I'm so stupid. I should have known to like turn around, blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, I actually, the listeners may have seen the, that trip report from Dave Lottman. Cause he was involved in a slide that day as well that they triggered remotely. That was on the other side of Oaks Gulf, but, that was about 5 minutes after this happened. And I actually witnessed that. But I was like so far away, I couldn't do anything, but I saw like the whole thing happen. Like, they were traversing underneath this thing and that came out, and like, I saw the two dots running towards one dot, but, So yeah, I would say that was the scariest part of the whole thing. I was definitely pretty rattled. And then like, obviously, you know, when I got down, like I didn't know like what had happened over in Raymond Cataract. Right. So, I actually went down to the, like to Hojo's to tell the Rangers about like what I had seen over in Oaks. And like, they were all like, no one, like everyone was like kind of running around, like really busy. And I was like, oh, like they must be mobilizing. Like, I'm just going to let it be. And I get down to the parking lot, Pinkham, there's like helicopters and rescue vehicles. I'm like, wow. Like, I was just really confused. Cause like, I feel like if this were for that slide I saw, they would be approaching from the west side. Right. And then like, I got a bunch of calls. Like, once I got back into service up in Gorham, like I got a bunch of calls on my phone, and it turns out, yeah, that accident in Raymond Cataract happened. And yeah, I was definitely felt like a little too close for comfort. I was definitely pretty rattled by that for a couple of days after.
Yeah. I was going to say, you gotta be like reconsidering a lot of things after something like that happens, right? You gotta be like, should I even be doing this? Like, should I keep doing these things? Like, it's gotta be terrifying for a couple of days.
Yeah. 100%. And I guess the other thing that kind of rattled me too, is like, I do time to times solo, which I'm not like recommending at all, but it's just what I do sometimes. And I try to be anyway, like really cautious. And like I back off of so much stuff by myself. And that was one instance where like I kind of went against my gut reaction, just because of this like book, you know, and it resulted in a pretty close call. So I would say that was definitely the scariest part of making this.
That's
and definitely made me reassess a lot of the decision making that I'm doing. So
I think that'll be huge for people to hear, though, because like one of the things that people don't consider enough, I think, when you're even when you're just doing regular stuff, never mind being in the backcountry, is all the external motivations that you have for skiing a line, whether it's like skiing. Sorry, I lost you there for a second.
Yeah, it's all good.
I think, yeah, this Wi-Fi in this room is like in this office is not the best. I think it just like it cuts in. It gives me like 40 minutes and then it cuts out. So I should have known it was coming.
Dude, my Wi-Fi sucks too. I actually poach my landlord's, so sick. It's like really sketchy.
Sick.
But
anyway, I think like, and that was an important part too. So like, I think it's important for people to know like, there's so many other things that go into what your day is like on a regular ski day, never mind skiing in the backcountry, right? Like for you, it's like you have the external motivation of like finishing a line in the book, right? Like, and for other people, it might be like they're skiing with their buddy that they want to impress, or like all these small things go into making shitty decisions. And that's almost, it's not more important, but it's just as important as having an education in what you're doing. Like, cause you got to be aware of what, like, am I doing this because I should be doing it and I feel comfortable doing it? Or am I doing it because I want to like impress some chick, or like impress a dude doing this, or like I want to like make my buddy think I'm sick? Like all these things are like, they sound wicked stupid when you say them out loud, but in the moment we all go through it. We're all like, oh yeah, I want this to be cool.
Yep, 100%.
So I think that'll be a good lesson for a lot of people. All right, let's do one more before we lose Wi-Fi forever. Let's see here. All right, Jammin Jamel 207 wants to know favorite zone in the book and why.
Ooh, I actually have two, and it depends on the time of year for each.
Okay.
So my favorite zone in the wintertime is Boochburg, mainly because I kind of favor more of that, like, kind of tighter, more defined, like, steep gully skiing.
Right.
And as opposed to kind of like big wide open stuff.
Right.
And I think Bootsburg has a lot of really good lines on it. And also the accessibility is unmatched, because I can be anywhere on the Bootsburg area and get back to my car in like 10 minutes if I need to. So
sick.
I think that's because you can just bomb like right back into the Sherb. So I think that's pretty cool. But my favorite springtime zone, I would say, is the Great Gulf.
Yep.
Because it kind of has like that same feel as Bootsburg, like steep, narrow gullies, a little longer. And I don't know. It's just, I've just had a lot of really fun days, like long spring days where the sun is shining kind of like out in the Great Gulf. So, yeah.
Very cool. Kurt, where can people find you on social? Where can people find the book, more importantly? Where can people find all the info they need to know?
Yeah, so on Insta, Presidential Skiing. Website's just presidentialskiing.com. And yeah, its book is available in a handful of retailers across northern New England. Check the website. There's this, I just added a store locator. So
whoa.
Yeah, pretty sweet.
Very sick.
So
cool. Well, thank you for doing this, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That was episode number 117 with Kurt Nealer. Hope you guys enjoyed it. I know I did. Go to www.presidentialskiing to learn more about the book. Check it out. And yeah, that's basically it. We will talk to you guys on Monday with, I don't know who yet, but somebody. So actually, not going to tell you yet. Talk to you soon and have a great weekend. Goodbye.